commencing countdown.
3, 2, 1.
This is the Contracting Experience. Connecting government contracting professionals to the world around them through conversations with acquisition influencers, insights into evolving hot topics, and sharing lessons learned from the field.
Welcome, podcast listeners. On this episode of The Contracting Experience, we sit down with Mr. Alex Height, Deputy Director of Contracting for Air Force Installation Contracting Centers operating location Europe at Ramstein Air Base, Germany. He's joined with Mr. Casey Kopecky, Deputy Chief of Contracts, Naval Supply Systems Command, Fleet Logistics Center in Naples, Italy. Alex and Casey are senior leaders with extensive experience navigating the unique challenges of government contracting in an overseas environment. Alex and Casey join us today to share their experiences leading teams and executing contracts throughout Europe. Welcome, Alex and Casey. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Rob. Thank you for having us.
Hey, good morning, Rob. Thanks.
All righty. Let's kick things off here with some brief introductions. Alex, you're currently stationed at Ramstein Air Base in Germany. Can you tell us a little bit about your role, your team, and the customers you support?
Absolutely. So as the Deputy Director of Contracting over here for USAFIAP Africa, that's United States Air Forces in Europe and Air Forces Africa, I'm the right-hand man to our SCO here, Colonel Richard Barnhart. He's our director at AFICC-KU. So I'm there to help support him in any way that I can. As the deputy, I'm, you know, sort of like a tech director as well as a deputy. So I have the ombudsman and compad responsibilities for the AOR, for the area of responsibility, and oftentimes act as the SCO for clearances and warrants and things like that whenever the director is not available. So it's nice, you know, given that we get to support some pretty large customers. You know, we are the Air Force mission lead for contracting for two combatant commands, U.S. European Command and also the U.S. AFRICOM Command. So U.S. EUCOM and U.S. AFRICOM, serving their commanders as the lead service for contracting coordination for any large issues that pop up in our AOR. So specifically, the director here is the LSCC, basically for Europe. So that's our major role from responsibilities basis. But on a day-to-day, you know, kind of actionable thing, we're responsible for all the acquisition guidance, policy, strategic sourcing, all those kinds of things for USAFE and AFRICOM. How do we, you know, develop and implement strategies and processes that, you know, increase or leverage kind of our purchasing power across the command for the 11 units supporting the warfighters across Europe and Africa. So it's been a fantastic job. I've been here just shy of four and a half years. And it's been just, you know, highlighted my career so far.
All right. Excellent. Thanks, Alex. And Casey, you're currently stationed in Naples, Italy. Can you tell us a little bit about your role, your team, and the customers you support?
Yeah, sure. So I am the Deputy Chief of Contracts for Naval Supply Command, otherwise known as NAVSUP. Our local command is actually headquartered down in Sigonella, which is on the island of Sicily. But I am stationed in Naples, where my office is right at the Naples airport. So it's really convenient for me to jump off of work and catch an airplane and go anywhere in Europe we want to go. We have just over 100 GS and local nationals and a few military. We're spread across three different acquisition divisions and one policy division. Most of our folks reside between Rota, Spain, Ceuta Bay, Greece, Sigonella, and Djibouti. But the majority of them are here in Naples. So I would say out of the 100 plus, we probably have about 55 or 60 of the people here. We directly support the 6th Fleet and all the tenant organizations around here and the 5 different sites. Our area of responsibility for the Navy runs from, if you think of Iceland down to the southern tip of Africa, and from Spain over to the Eastern Med. That's our AOR for taking care of all the ships and Navy support throughout our area. Over.
All right. Great. Thanks, Casey. So let's dive into maybe some of the intricacies or nuances of being a contracting professional in an overseas environment. Casey, what are the most immediate challenges a contracting officer faces when they arrive at an overseas assignment? And do you maybe have a specific story you could share with how you dealt with these challenges?
Okay. So, well, first and foremost, the first thing you want to do is find a place to live. Find a place to live and getting your belongings set up. Because coming to Italy, it's a very long process. You have to get your orders, of course, and you have to get your passports. But Italy also requires a visa in order to come in. So that takes quite a long process. It runs anywhere from, we start recruiting about 18 months out because we just don't know how long it's going to take sometimes. Contractually, I would say it's pretty standard. We do have some unique clauses, like you don't contract with the mafia in Italy. So that one's kind of a unique one. Other than that, things are pretty much straightforward. We used to use a local site for posting all of our requirements, but recently we changed all of our requirements and posted everything stateside. So that's been a nice change. We did recently run into an issue because we rolled out a new contract writing system and learned that it doesn't have the euro sign inside the contract writing system, and 80% of our work is done in euros. So that was a little unique challenge we had to deal with right off the bat.
All right. Yeah. Interesting. So have we gotten that fixed for you?
I think it's still in the work. We got workarounds for the time being. You know how IT systems are.
Right. Yeah. So not everybody uses the US dollar. So that's, something to keep in mind for sure.
Exactly.
So, Alex, Casey's experiences are coming from supporting the U.S. Navy in Italy. You're supporting the Air Force in Germany. Does your team face similar challenges to what Casey described? Or maybe have you seen some differences in how people acclimate in an overseas environment?
Yeah, so a lot of what Casey's saying, holds true here as well. I mean, a critical part of our job just involves working and operating within kind of the legal frameworks of what are known as status of forces agreements, right? Our agreements with the host nations. My units here they're in England, they're in Spain, they're in Italy, they're in Germany. And each one of those countries has its own nuances or specific country specific kind of laws that prevent is not the right word, but require a different approach than, another. So if you're in Italy, we have certain rules about hiring there versus England. Construction in the UK is different than construction in Germany. So learning those that's really the biggest difference from kind of that technical side of things. But we're lucky. There is a lot of fluidity here. As someone who spent, beginning of my career at Wright Pat, you always had quite a bit of continuity in each of those offices. So, luckily for us over here, we do have those local national employees, the German or Italian or British employees, who provide that continuity over the years as the military and the civs kind of come and go. So, it's a huge part of our success here is having those local national employees to provide background and insight.
All right, great. And you're using the Air Force version of ConIT. So any issues with the euro symbol there?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, great.
We've had other issues with currency, but that's not one of them.
Thanks for clarifying that. Alex, let's give you the first shot at this next question. So some might say contracting is contracting regardless of where you do it. As in, we're all operating off of the same playbook, right? But do you see your workload or your contract portfolio pretty similar to maybe an organization stateside? I'm assuming everything from source selections to GPC purchases and everything in between, maybe some other transactions as well. Is that about right, or do you see differences in your contract portfolio based on being overseas?
Yes, if I remember correctly, both of you guys were prior military, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So as a career civilian coming from, you know, Wright Pat, which is generally known as the systems base, people forget that there's so many other opportunities there for subsystems and operational and you know, strategic sourcing and things like that. So if you come from a systems base and only have a systems background, then obviously some of the work and the jobs over here are going to be a little different. But, you know, I've always believed that contracting is contracting, right? With the simple caveat that, you know, each of these different realms of contracting specialty have their own nuances and practices and things that I believe build a well-rounded contracting professional, right? So, you know, that ideology was always pretty key to, you know, how we worked employer rotation plans at LCMC, right? Let's make a well-rounded individual. So, if you're coming from systems only, yeah, maybe you're in for a bit of a surprise. But if you have some background in operational contracting or specialized contracting or strategic sourcing or services, then, you know, the work we do over here is it's contracting is contracting, right? You know, we still have a robust GPC program. We have numerous source selections going on at any time across USAFEF Africa. So what I will say is where folks can gain new skills that are less likely to happen, you know, CONUS, is with those unique kind of processes that are inherent to overseas assignments, right? You're still going to do base operating support efforts. You're still going to do custodial and ground maintenance and refuse and ANAS, you know, advisory assistance services, but they may have a little bit of a twist. So there's certain laws, you know, let's say in Germany, where you can't, you're not supposed to hire an American if there's a German who's capable of doing that job. And I'm, you know, wide brush strokes here, but you have to make sure you follow those and you have to go through the process of ensuring that the contractor that you're hiring is able to get through those hurdles. But having said that, I mean, we still lots of IDIQs, right? We have numerous nearly billion-dollar efforts for things like airbase air defense or IT services. We've got one going through that's a IDIQ, a MAC IDIQ for installation support services. So you know, don't be afraid that coming over here is somehow going to pigeonhole you or keep you out of an opportunity. If anything, it's going to provide a more robust background. Still do SABRs, still do multiple word construction contracts, but you also might work on the Germany Airmail terminal contract, which is, you know, how we get all of our mail to all the post offices across the area. It's really been good to see the other side of it. But, you know, just like rotating on a base in the States, as long as you're willing to be flexible and learn and do your due diligence, I mean, anything is, you can pick up anything quickly. Over.
All right. Thanks, Alex. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Casey, same sort of question. You moved from an Air Force career to a Navy assignment, as well as moving from stateside to overseas. What does your contracting portfolio look like? Any big differences from your other contracting assignments?
Yeah, it's quite a bit different, actually. So across our three acquisition divisions, one of them is ship repair, which by the title, you know, you're repairing ships. Ironically, NAVSUP does not do that stateside. A different command does. So this is a unique function for this command to do overseas. So as you can imagine, when we are recruiting, we are either having to steal somebody from the command that does ship repair back home, or we have to bring people in and get them up to speed and train them up. And I will tell you, ship repair is something very unique. It's a great experience for someone who wants to try something different, and you get some great travel out of it, because when a lot of times when these bigger ships pull into a port to get repaired, we send people boots on the ground. So we send people to Croatia, we send them to Morocco, we send them to Turkey, we've sent them to all over Italy. So it's a unique experience. So that one's unique. Another one of our divisions is they call it husbandry, which has to do with providing the ships all the food, water, fuel, garbage, services whenever they pull into a port. So the ship is out in the middle of the Med and they decide they want a port visit. They contact Sixth Fleet. Sixth Fleet sends us the requirement. We do a quick competition and once a multiple award IDIQ, and the ship pulls in 3 days later. I mean, it's very unique. It's another one of those experiences. If it's a big enough ship, we will send people downrange and have them be boots on the ground to welcome the ship in and take care of all the amenities that go along with it. Both of those groups, though, both stand weekend shifts. They both do after-hour shifts. So they tend to have a higher burnout rate, but you don't have as much flexibility a lot of times with your travel, your leisure time, because, everything's scheduled, but you have to pull those shifts. The one thing I will say that was the most unique is in the Air Force, you have one head of contracting agency, right? One HCA, that's General French. In the Navy, we have 11. And as you can imagine, the 11 different HCAs are limited by the Navy Marine Corps acquisition regulation. So on your warrant, it does not say you can execute anything in accordance with the FAR or DFARS. It says you can execute anything in accordance with the Navy Marine Corps acquisition regulation. So a lot of times, for instance, here on Capo, we have, like I said, about 50-60 contracting professionals. NAVFAC, who does the more of the boss type contracts in construction, they have about 40 or 50. So we have 100 contracting people here, in which swim lanes tend to get blurred at times. So we have our headquarters on speed dial with lawyers to try to determine whose job is whose when it comes to the NM cars. So that's a little bit unique from the Navy perspective as coming from the Air Force. Over.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Casey. Yeah, definitely some big differences there. So let's give you the first shot at this next question. You've each identified some nuances, some similarities, and perhaps some challenges with working overseas. But I think maybe the common perception from a lot of us is that these are absolutely dream assignments, right? Traveling around the world, experiencing new cultures, broadening your horizons, both personally and professionally. And again, I'm talking in generalities, but can you talk about some of the specific benefits of an overseas assignment, both personally and professionally? Any good stories to share there?
Okay. So personally, it's been an absolutely amazing experience. When we got here, my wife and I said, we're going to embrace the Italian culture. So we moved as far away from all the Americans as we could. We settled in a little town called Pozzuoli, which is about a 25-minute drive from here. And of course, we've ran into some Italians that speak English. So they've kind of adopted us into their little community. It's a cute little fishing town just on the outskirts of Naples. Professionally, I would say the first 6 to 8 months were extremely challenging just because changing from the culture from the Air Force, the business practices, how the Navy did things is completely different from the Air Force. The way the Navy is organized is completely different from the Air Force. So the first 6 to 8 months was a real challenge. And of course, within 45 days of arriving here, my boss at the time retired. So I was in the process of learning, leading, and trying to run an organization all at the same time. So it was a little bit challenging, but after about 8 months, I think I kind of hit my stride. I will say this Navy mission here is second to none. I mean, I know we always talk about in the Air Force, the pointing of the spear and being, close to the warfighter. But if you've ever watched the news in the last 2 years and you've heard about any ship floating around in the Mediterranean, our people have taken care of them, whether they fixed the ship or they got them new supplies or they ran the ports. So you can't get much closer to the pointing of the spear than working in a job like this. So that's been a very rewarding job for me personally. Over.
All right. Thanks, Casey. And Alex, same sort of question. What are the specific benefits of an overseas assignment, both personally and professionally? And I know you're from Germany originally. So, and any good stories to share there?
Yeah. So having grown up over here as a dependent, it was nice to kind of be back. That was certainly a plus for my wife and I who kind of met over here. But I think the big benefits are it's just a broadening of your mind, right? Like I had the opportunity to work with the joint world over here, which is something I didn't really have a chance to do prior to my time over here. You develop these very unique skills in combination with a broader perspective based on, you know, the people around you, whether it's the local nationals that you work with or the local nationals on the economy, or, you know, coming from Wright Pat, where it's, you know, X percent civilian versus military, much higher civilian population in contract than military. You know, you're living in a nearly everybody here is wearing camo, right? That opens up a lot of things for our kids. It's been great to have them in DoDEA schools and you know the broad spectrum of different thoughts and teachings and things that come out of that. So huge pluses there. Casey's not wrong. When you have a long weekend, you know, you take it, and it's nice when you can, you know, hop in your car and, you know, point in literally any direction almost, and with an 8-hour drive, be in an entirely different society. So, you know, it sounds like a dream job, like all everybody does is travel and tour, but it's more than that. It is truly one of those work hard, play hard kind of environments where, you know, our folks are very good about, you know, working themselves and knocking out requirements. But yeah, long weekend, spring break, you know, the holidays, people tend to go see new things that would be very difficult to get to, let's say from, I don't know, Wyoming or Utah or Ohio. So that's been a huge plus.
All right. Yeah. Again, that makes a lot of sense. Like you alluded to earlier, that depth and breadth professionally, as well as depth and breadth on a personal level. So awesome, guys. Thanks for sharing that. How about best practices? Alex, let's start with you on this one. Is there any best practice, either stateside or overseas, that you would recommend be implemented one way or the other? Or are we, you know, kind of working off of the same playbook already?
It's to me, it's kind of the same. This is something that I think as leaders, the three of us always preached, you know, in our prior jobs, right? It's learning and teaching, right? So anytime you get rotated a new office or a new base or a new position, you have to be open to learning from those folks that are around you that have a better understanding of how to get things done. So from a learning perspective, be open, not to the point of this always been done this way mentality, but be open to learning new things from people who have experience, but also teaching, right? Your job is to pass that on to those who pass you during your career, right? Whether they work for you, you work for them, or you're just able to take some time and mentor and coach, you have to be about teaching as well. So not that it's new or unique to being overseas, but there are certainly, as I've stated, unique things that are specific to here that need to be passed on. So again, not anything mind-blowing, but being open-minded and flexible is the key to success anywhere, but that holds true in Europe as well.
All right. Thanks, Alex. And Casey, same question. And again, your hands might be a little more tied with the cross-service perspective, but anything jumped out to you as a best practice, either overseas or Air Force-wise, compared to the Navy or vice versa?
Well, I will say off the top of my head, I can't think of anything I'd want to bring back. There's some things I'd like to change with the Navy, but I'm not sticking around long enough for that. I always thought, especially being retired military too, that, you know, DOD is DOD is DOD. And I think for the most part it is, but the cultures that we reside in the different departments, are completely different. So me coming here learned a whole new way leadership wise of how the Navy leads and interacts as compared to the Air Force. So I will say I probably have learned some new coping skills, some new ways of learning to deal with things that I will definitely bring back when I return to Wright Pat. Over.
All right. Thanks, Casey. So again, big thanks to both of you. One final question. A lot of our listeners have probably tuned in for this and this maybe alone, but how can folks apply for these overseas positions? Is it just monitoring the usual USA job announcements, or is there something else that people can do to position themselves for maybe one of these overseas assignments? Casey, what do you think?
So I would say definitely do your homework and know what you're potentially getting yourself into. I will tell you that for us, we put out long-term announcements and we just pull at any given time. And we can get, just thrown out there in Rota, we can get 125 people applying for a GS-12. And some of them are GS-14s and 15s because they just want to take the job. Naples, we usually don't get as many, maybe 60 or 70. But again, as a GS-12 or 13, we got 14s and 15s that are applying. So be patient. Keep trying. And again, if someone's really interested, feel free to look me up on the global and shoot me an email. Not that I'm going to help you get the job, but I can at least give you some pointers on some of the things you can expect, some of the things you, be prepared for. Cause I will definitely say, the process getting here, once you get here, or once you get selected, you need to have a good sense of humor because it is a long hiring process and, a lot of bumps along the way. So, if you're really set on going overseas, stay persistent and don't give up hope. Over.
All right. Thanks, Casey. Yeah. Great words of advice there. And again, a reminder is you're looking 18 months out for some of these jobs. So definitely something to keep in mind for folks to position themselves on a personal level as well. So over to you, Alex. Any advice for those folks that want to come and work with you? How can they increase their chances of being selected to take their talents around the globe?
So we post everything on USA Jobs, right? So that's an easy one. I mean, by the time this is released, I'm sure they'll be over, but I mean, we have four or five positions out right now for hiring. So we always do USA Jobs. Keep it on that. You can set a search query thing that'll send you a daily or weekly update on all positions that come open in Europe, in Germany, in Ramstein, however you set it up. But we also try and put things out on Facebook and LinkedIn and the Air Force jobs boards. We're trying to find, every avenue possible to get the best candidates here. What I will say is, at least here at KU, right, as a kind of headquarters director level, we tend to look for unlimited PCOs. You'll see a lot of that over here, because many of our local nationals fill those buyer roles or maybe limited warrant capacities. But if you have an unlimited warrant, that certainly helps your chances. But keep an eye out, and just as Casey said, send me a note that you're interested, and I've got a list of people who have inquired in the past, and I'm happy to make sure that as things come up, I do my best to send them out to individuals. So. Echoing Casey, I mean, we tend to get very, very highly qualified folks, SESs, 15s, 14s, who are willing to take, NHO3s. So, make sure that your expectations are kind of tempered. Make sure that your resume and your background and all the things you can do to make yourself the most viable candidate and get to that interview room are on there, right? Make sure it says unlimited PCO on your resume. Make sure it says ACSC or Air War College or whatever PME you might have. If you were a supervisor, what level was it at and for how long? So your grade, all those things at the resume level help get you into the room. And then, once the interviews hit, it's wide open. It's anybody's game. So make sure your resume is up to date, clear, and something that we can easily sift through. Because we may get, like the last job, the job I'm interviewing people for today, we had 103 applicants. Wow. So don't hide, don't hide or forget to put your information somewhere where we can find it.
All right. No, great, great advice there, Alex. And again, just I like what you said. They're kind of level expectations, right? As maybe a GS-12, maybe newly warranted, you're competing against maybe some 14s and 15s out there that just want the location. So, great advice there. Take care of the unlimited warrant, take care of your professional military education, position yourself in the best possible light. So yeah, great advice. So gentlemen, this has been a great conversation. I want to thank you both for joining us on the Contracting Experience podcast. But before I let you go, I want to offer you any parting shots or drop the mic moments that you might have for our listeners. Alex, let's start with you. Anything you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I don't have any drop the mic moments. Nothing that exciting. No, it's just simply that, you know, an OCONUS experience, it's been a game changer for me as a contracting professional. As a career civilian, I had worked in all kinds of different environments, you know, R&D, systems, staff, I was a pricer for a minute. I mean, that all those opportunities have been wonderful. You know, I worked operational at the PZIO for a while, PZIT, but just being over here, it just opens up an entirely different vector for you, whether it's joint partnerships or engagements with our local national employees or our European partners. It's all new each day, and it's been just an absolute blessing. So if I can help someone else get that experience, I am absolutely happy to do so.
All right. Thanks, Alex. And Casey, over to you. Any parting shots for our listening audience?
Well, let me just start with you, Rob. Thanks for the invite and entertaining this. It has been fun. I missed my right path links, so I'll be getting back there eventually one day. But I will say my experience here in Italy and working for the Navy, it's really been challenging but extremely rewarding. You know, like Alex said, the travel is... I mean, I was just in Stuttgart over the weekend, and, you know, I'm going to Cabo Verde in another month or so. So the travel opportunities are immense, but it is really a challenging experience, and it's been very rewarding getting to work with a lot of the local nationals who are great, absolutely great employees. But again, if anybody has any questions, anything about NAVSUP, the Navy, Italy, feel free to shoot me an email, look me up in the global. I'm out there somewhere. And I'd be happy to address any questions they might have. Thanks again, Rob.
All right. Thanks, Casey. So Mr. Alex Height and Mr. Casey Kopecky, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and insights on the Contracting Experience. Again, been a great conversation, and I'm grateful you could both join us. So on behalf of the Contracting Experience podcast, all of our listeners and subscribers, thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you to all of our podcast listeners, followers, and subscribers. If you have any feedback, suggestions for topics, or future guests you would like to hear on the podcast, you can submit those via email to thecontractingexperience@gmail.com. As a reminder, you can subscribe to the Contracting Experience podcast from any of your podcast listening platforms. Be sure to subscribe to receive updates and automatic downloads so you don't miss a single episode. I'm your host, Rob Lorton, from the AFMC Contracting Digital Division, and I hope you can join us again on our upcoming episodes. Until then, stay tuned and stay connected.